All right, all you good, wonderful citizens of Crypt Nation. I hope you guys are having a wonderful Thursday. I know I am. Well, I wouldn't say I'm having a wonderful, wonderful Thursday. The markets have been a little depressing recently, I'm not going to lie. Things have been looking like they're recovering, but the last couple weeks we've been in quite the correction here. Pizza Mind, how are you holding up? I hope it's not taking too much of a toll on your emotions here on the 24th episode of the Weekly Fire.
Are you freaking kidding me, man? Like, the coronavirus is spreading. I just had to cancel my trip to Switzerland. I didn't even want to let you in my house today. Like, you could be infected.
I could be.
You could be. You might be the death of me, Bryce. Light up my life for so long, and now you're going to be the death of me.
Well, I think we're going to be okay. You know, we're here in the United States. And I don't even want to play into all the media hype around this whole thing that's going on with the coronavirus. I kind of just have a feeling it's getting overblown. This happens every, you know, 3 or 4 years. You're going to get the Ebola scare. You're going to get SARS. You're going to get mad cow or bird flu or, I mean, you name it.
This time they're burning people alive, man, just to clear up more bed space.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyhow, let's talk
about... Please take the wheel, Jesus. We clearly are drunk.
Let us talk about the important things called cryptocurrency. How about that?
Well... How's the crypto weather report looking, Bryce? Any more positive?
Before I get into the crypto weather report, I want to do a quick reminder for everybody who's listening that if you want to go deeper inside the Crypto 101 world, and if you want to get deeper involved in CryptNation.com, just go check out Crypto101Insider.com. That's where you can kind of get access to all the trades that Pizza Mind and I are making. Access to our portfolio, access to our market insights, our deep analysis, our newsletters, our instructional videos, all that really exciting stuff for just a dollar. So that is something really exciting. You could get that at crypto101insider.com. And I also want to remind everybody that today's episode is brought to you by our latest, hottest sponsor, Cog Network. Cog Network is simply geared for gains. So if you want to learn about Cog Network and what that means, being geared for gains, go to www.cog.network to learn more. So on to the weather report. Pizza Mind, why don't I flip the script and have you start the weather report and tell us what you are seeing?
It's raining blood.
It's raining blood.
Everywhere. I mean... Stock markets collapsing, crypto markets, correcting.
Correct.
I'm just going to say correcting, not collapsing. I still feel very confident that we are in a bull trend, but we've been saying for a few weeks now, we think there's going to be one more retrace before mm-hmm. we skyrocket, and we've been watching, and now I think we're on our fourth leg down. I feel like there might still be one more to go, but I've been selling off and buying back, and... just kind of playing the ebbs and flows, and it's a great time to be shorting right now. Unfortunately, you have to be really, really careful because your stop losses will get liquidated. I put on a really amazing short on Litecoin last night.
Oh, wow.
And if it had hit my take profit, which it did, I would have made 15 grand off of a $4,000 entry.
Wow.
However, it shot up first. And triggered my stop loss going down. So I didn't make it.
Yikes.
No profits for me.
No profits for poor old little Pizza Mind.
That's right.
I'm definitely seeing we're at this point in the market where the altcoins are really leading Bitcoin, right, in the short term. So we have Bitcoin set off this really long-term bull trend really towards the beginning of the year, towards the end of last year, started to tick back up. After its, you know, main correction from June, right? So to kind of recap, in 2019, we had the first half of 2019 was awesome. The market ticked up from 3K all the way up to 14K, really in the span of 6 months. I mean, it was a massive first half of the year. And then the back half of the year, we found ourselves... promptly gaining or losing all of the gains, basically making it a 100% year-over-year gain for Bitcoin, which, you know, it's nice, but it was not nearly as nice as being up 300 or 400%. So now, after that retrace, we stabilized. We had an inverse head and shoulders in the high 6Ks, low 7Ks, and we pumped back up to about 10.5. And from there, you know, which was about 3 weeks ago, from there we've really been in this correction. And I call it correction. I don't call it a crash, because what it is, it looks just like a high time frame bull flag, essentially, where we have a low time frame downtrend in context of a high time frame uptrend. So that means if you look at a weekly chart, we're clearly, you know, above significant moving averages. We're above our 200-day moving average, and we are, you know, heading upwards. But if you zoom in a little bit, we're just coming down a little bit, and it's just not anything to really shake the bull trend. It's nothing that shakes out the long-term investors. What it does, you know, the character of a bull flag is something that shakes out short-term investors. So, and the character of a price correction is it shakes out the short-term investors. Everybody who has their stop losses at, you know, the 20-day moving average, the 50-day moving average, they all get liquidated. But the long-term investors who have their bids set patiently, I mean, some people wait months for their bids to get hit. That's why we always say the market is a mechanism for transferring wealth from the impatient to the patient. It's something that you can never forget, is that the patient bids are what are going to get hit. So I really wouldn't be surprised to see us come back and test this resistance turn support right here around, call it, looking at the chart now, anywhere between 82.50 and 84.60. Though that's really my, you know, main buy zone here for the weekly fire call out today, you know, Thursday the 27th. As for the altcoins, we're seeing those guys lead Bitcoin, meaning they're getting quick bounces. They're getting oversold quicker, but then also, you know, coming back up through their moving averages a lot quicker than Bitcoin. So we have Bitcoin set the long-term trend, and then we have altcoins set those short-term trends. And they're bouncing here pretty nicely today and yesterday. So I'm pretty excited about where we're at. Definitely not shaken. I mean, you and I have been in this market for years, and we see volatility like this all the time. So it doesn't scare us. Again, I'm getting friends out of the blue who are texting me about crypto. One of my friends texted me yesterday, who I hang out with. We go out on the weekends every now and again. Shout out to Brian. He goes, he's trading on Robinhood, and he's, you know, kind of panicking. He's like, well, Bitcoin is down so much. It's down 8,600. What do? Do I buy? Do I sell? I'm like, hey, man, it's a good dip to buy, all that kind of stuff. And so it was just funny to get a little note from my buddy. And I'm getting notes from all sorts of different people asking me, what's going on in the markets? Is this it? Is this the end? Are we going back to 3K? Is Bitcoin done? All that kind of stuff. So guys, long story short, we're still in a bull market. Don't get shaken out by short-term volatility. The momentum indicators are just getting a little recharged. Price is basing, and we're definitely going to be making new highs here pretty soon. So without further ado, why don't we just hop on over to Hot or Not?
Hot or Not. Well, this week's section of Hot is pretty pitiful.
We're like talking all twos or threes. Definitely not tens.
We got a couple gainers that really defied expectations, and that is Aon up 23%. However, it was up like 100% at one point.
Yeah.
And it's collapsed back down to 23%. So that'll tell you what kind of crazy run that thing was on.
And I want to have a funny little story real quickly about Aon Network. I was at my buddy, and I think I might have told this story actually on Crypto 101 on the Weekly Fire before, but I'll tell it again since they're the number one gainer in the last 7 days, trading $26 million of daily volume today against a $57 million market cap. But what was so funny was I was at my buddy's soccer game, and it's like not professional, not semi-professional, just like a men's under 40 league or something. And I look at his jersey, and it has Aon Network on there. And I'm like, after the game, I go up to him. I'm like, dude, who's your sponsor? And he's like, I don't even know. Like, what are you talking about? I'm not, like, not looking at the shirts or anything. Never been to the website. And I'm like, dude, I'm pretty sure that that's a cryptocurrency. And he's like, get out of here. There's no way. And then sure enough, we go look at the website, and it's the same AION network. So AION is doing some grassroots marketing at local men's soccer league jerseys. And this week it paid off, it looks like. Again, up 23% on the week.
That's one of the coins that had the worst collapses during the bear market. I mean, it was down 99%.
Yeah.
And, you know, it completely fallen off the radar. People wondered if it was, you know, completely dead. But no, it's been quietly in development, and now it's surging right back.
And the last thing I'll note on AION's performance this week, yesterday, Wednesday the 26th, it had the highest daily volume in its entire history. So there's this principle in markets where price seeks volume. And when price finds volume, it oftentimes reverses. So we have had a downtrend in this frickin' coin for, like Pizza Mind said, almost 3 years. And we just found a lot of capitulatory buyer or capitulatory sellers, people who said, I've had enough, I'm done. And there was a market there, a demand there to absorb it. So I'm actually pretty bullish on this coin here going into 2020 and 2021. They definitely have strong fundamentals, but the tokenomics were a little skewed. I think they had some lockups that got released, and some, you know, they were one of the ICOs in 2017 that just quick cash grab, and then we'll figure out what we do later. And they've built, but yeah, the price of the token has just gotten plummeted, absolutely hammered. But now it's a little bit better. So shout out to Luke for that one.
After that, we have DX. DX chain up 21.5% on 2.8 million daily volume, $89 million market cap. And then we have a fall off. Number three, Algorand, only up 3.9% on 173 million daily volume. Whoa. And a $221 million market cap. After that, it's all downhill from here. Enigma leads the bloodbath, down 51.8% on $2.3 million daily volume, and now a paltry $18.9 million market cap. No one is sleeping in the Enigma project right now.
Sweet Christ. I mean, for all the fundamental, like, you know, they've got really strong tech, right? They've got extremely private smart contracts. They've got some really impressive partnerships, but 51% in a week down. I mean, if you guys are listening to this and thinking you want to get into crypto, but you can't stomach the volatility, then you just get out now, because this is what it's about. That's why we say you never invest more than you could afford to lose.
Have you heard any news about this? Like, is this an exit scam, a hack?
No.
No, nothing.
Not at all.
It's just crypto. So that's a hell of a dip to maybe buy. Then we have Monacoin down 43% on $23 million daily volume, $111 million market cap still. And then Decentraland, Mana is the token ticker, down 41.4% on $30 million daily volume, $50.6 million market cap. This is not even an ouch. This is just straight up, But if you're in crypto, you have to have the balls to come back from this.
I remember hearing a lot of stuff on Twitter this week about Mana, because they released their beta, and there was a lot of people, like, again, this is a sell, you know, buy the rumor, sell the news kind of event. So even though Mana is backed by, you know, Barry Silbert, for instance, who is arguably the largest broker dealer of crypto in the entire world, his Grayscale investment fund, all of the projects that he has, Digital Currency Group, they have a very strong interest in Decentraland, which is this virtual reality world whereby you could actually own chunks of these different little pieces of land inside this virtual reality video game. And you could, you know, have, you know, build in the future real businesses in here and, you know, lease out your land and stuff. So imagine you own this big plot of land in this virtual reality world, and you know, a store like Macy's or Nordstrom's or whatever wants to come up and lease that land from you. Again, it's like this idea that's way out in the future, but I mean, I think that we're going to be spending a lot of time in virtual reality, you know, 20 years down the line. So anyhow, it's like a really far out of this world concept. The point I'm trying to make is that they released their beta version like this week or whatever, and people on Twitter were like playing around with it. And like some influencers were just like, dude, like I'm in here. I have no idea what to do. It's a fucking ghost town. There were like all these GIFs that were getting made of people and like their little like avatars that literally like it looks like an 8-bit just old school video game. And you're just like, oh, my God, how does this thing have a $50 million market cap? And it's just you know, a lot of hype and stuff. So I think that's why it's down 41.5% this week. Because a lot of people just kind of realize like, hey, this is a cool idea, but it's maybe a little far from being a reality. So anyhow, that's that. That's Hot or Not. Let's move on to my personal favorite little segment here. This is called Fire Tweets. One of my favorite Twitter handles is this guy named Jeremy Ross. He's at Jebus911. That's at Jebus911. On February 25th, again, we don't condone what he is saying. It's just a joke. But it was just kind of funny, right? He goes, meth is a better store of value than gold and has actual utility in a societal collapse situation. So Jeremy is like this, you know, epic crypto trader. He's a legend. And he's just trying to kind of poke fun at gold bugs. I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny, so that's why I wanted to post. And the other one is he's just basically trying to say that, like, gold is overhyped and that, like, people are always saying, like, oh, you know, coronavirus is happening. The world is going to end. Everybody buy gold. And he's just saying, like, you know, that's a fallacy. So I thought that was really funny. That one got a lot of retweets and likes. It shows you the quality of the people on crypto Twitter, for better or for worse. And this other one is from a girl we follow named Justine. It's at the mean Justine. This was on February 25th. And this was, she's kind of talking about, you know, Warren Buffett has been a lot in the news recently because of, you know, he talked about Bitcoin on national television and how he's not necessarily a big fan of it. And then he had a dinner with a lot of big Bitcoiners in the space, and that made national news as well. And so she tweets, quote, projects deemed, quote unquote, worthless by Warren Buffett. Google, Amazon. This isn't in her tweet, but he also said Apple. He didn't understand. And then also hashtag Bitcoin. So he's already had to write apology letters to his shareholders for being so damn wrong about the first two. The third will come soon enough. Some people will never get it, and he's one of them, and that's okay. And so Warren Buffett is self-admittedly not a technologist. He's a value investor. Again, arguably one of the greatest investors in the world. You know, nobody understands value investing quite like Warren Buffett, and nobody's really built businesses like him and found great deals. Again, Warren Buffett perhaps saved us from, you know, the apocalypse when he bought, you know, Wells Fargo in the financial crash of 2009 and 2008, when you know Ben Bernanke and Timothy Geithner, basically the guys that were, and Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary and the Chairman of the Federal Reserve, these guys are coming out and saying we need somebody who's liquid that can save the banks from global catastrophe and all that stuff, and we just need to save one bank. We need to buy the assets, you know, for pennies on the dollar, or else the entire, you know, the liquidity of the entire system dries up. And so Warren Buffett kept tempting the market lower and lower and lower. And these guys from the government, you know, Tim and Ben, they would come to him every day and saying, are you going to buy Wells Fargo today? Are you going to buy Wells Fargo today? Are you going to buy Wells Fargo today? Keep bringing it lower. The market kept crashing. And finally, lo and behold, I think it was March of 2009 when he finally picked up that bid and said, all right, this is the value that I could get behind. cash flows. I'm going to look at, you know, price to earnings, everything, look at the entire market environment, and boom, pulls the trigger. And that is literally the bottom of the market. So that was a really cool thing. But again, didn't buy Apple, said Google was a scam, said Amazon was a scam, thought Apple was nonsense, just doesn't understand technology. And he's admitted in writing to his shareholders, there's letters out there that you guys could read, that he says, I'm wrong about these things, I'm sorry, but that's not my thing. I rather buy McDonald's and Coca-Cola and farms and banks and all that stuff with projectable cash flow. So again, even though he says he's not a big fan on Bitcoin, it's probably because he's talking his own book a little bit, right? I mean, he's one of the largest holders of cash. I mean, you know, the world says he's the richest person or one of the richest people. But in reality, what does that mean? He's defending a position, a cash position. Just like how if a hedge fund manager is saying, oh, Tesla is going to go to $2,000, it's probably because he's in Tesla, right? So again, he's defending his cash position, and that's cool. We get it. We learned a lot from Warren Buffett. We've read his books. Smart guy, but not a technologist.
Do you have a friend who's interested in getting into cryptocurrency, but they don't know where to start building their portfolio? Well, we have the answer. It's called CopyTrader by eToro. With CopyTrader, you can automatically copy every trade of eToro's top crypto traders, just like myself or Bryce or Kevin, at the exact price point and in real time. No need to study up on markets or develop your own strategies. Simply just sign up and copy our trades. Any profits that we make, you do too. Proportional to your investment, of course. With eToro, you get access to the world's most popular cryptocurrencies with transparent trading fees all in one easy-to-use app. Copy the smart money with eToro. Moving on to scorched earth now. Speaking of buying Tesla, how about people who got absolutely burned buying Tesla at $900? And probably the same people also bought Bitcoin at 19,000. So how do you know when to not FOMO? We're going to have a little discussion about that. Fortunately, neither Bryce nor I have made these mistakes. But here's why not. Because when you see these rapid price spikes and movements that conjure up those feelings of missing out on you, you have to train yourself to realize that is the absolute wrong time to buy. Because someone else who already bought in, they're looking to dump their bags on you. There's an old adage saying, you know, there's a sucker in every room, and if you can't identify who it is, you're the sucker.
Right, yeah.
That's 100% true when it comes to this stuff. So if you don't immediately realize that you're getting a good deal, you're the one getting picked on. How do you see when, you know, the market's going up and it's a good time to buy in versus the market has peaked and it's time to stay away?
Yeah, I mean, before I really get into how I tell if a market is like overheated or not, I wanted to tell a little story about a company that I'm sure everybody's heard, Blue Apron. And Blue Apron is the company that maybe your mom subscribes to, or maybe you subscribe to if you're a bachelor, right? They send you prepackaged little meal kits that you can make and stuff. Everybody in 2015, 2016 thought this was just like the hottest thing in the world. And for reference, Blue Apron was valued at $2 billion on the private market in 2015. Okay. By 2018, they had about $660 million in revenue. So people were thinking, wow, they got great cash flows. This is a big business. They're growing, all that kind of stuff. Cash flows started to subside. They went public. Guys, this Blue Apron company has a market capitalization currently of $30 million. So they went from a valuation of $2 billion. All these VCs that went in, hyped it up, got in really low. They IPO'd, right? And they dumped their shares on the public. And how do you recover from that? It's just crazy. So I just wanted to tell that story because you brought up Tesla at $1,000, which is like $970 a couple weeks ago. Now it's kind of stabilized around $700 or $800, probably a little bit more downside to wipe out all the investors that got in into the FOMO. But one of the ways that I like to look at markets, you know, in regards to if they're overheated or if they're really cold, is just by using sentiment. And I'm kind of like the go-to guy for my little, you know, cluster of, you know, my little network or whatever. Like, people just know I'm in crypto, so they just text me all the time. And it's just so funny because the correlations between price and texts, or, you know, is just so high, because I know when a market is bottoming out because I get fearful texts from friends. And I know when a market is topping out because I get really, really, really excited texts from my friends. For instance, I was at Legoland with my girlfriend the other day, and she's like, hey, one of my coworkers wants to buy Tezos. Like, could you walk him through how to do this? And I looked at the price chart, and Tezos is like parabolic. It's at $4. And, you know, I was buying it at, you know, $1.23, and telling her, you know, buy it at $1.23 or whatever. And she got in, and she's making all this money, and she's telling all her friends about it or whatever. And then, of course, like, nobody believes it until you see you're up a few hundred percentage points. Okay. Great. So now they text you and they say, well, how do I buy now? And that's when I knew, I was like, oh fuck, well, now I should start selling my position because, you know, you know, everybody's starting to buy the top and stuff. So, long story short, I just use a lot of sentiment. You could use sentiment trackers online. There's a different couple things that track social media activity and stuff to see price relative to conversations and hashtags and all sorts of stuff like that. I really like to use, now it's a proprietary service that we subscribe to called thetie.io. We've had Josh Frank on the show before. But you could basically see how much tweet volume and activity. You know, he uses some natural language processing to really filter out through the noise to see things. I really like them and tracking sentiment and being able to see, like, hey, people that weren't in the market. Because really, at the end of the day, right, prices are people and people are prices. The only thing that determines a price is a person. People don't really understand that a lot of the times. They think, you know, it's all just robots and chaos and stuff. But really, it's just emotion, and people only act emotionally. And, you know, a person only buys a stock or a crypto if they think it's going to go up. That is fundamentally what people do. They don't buy something if they think it's going to go down. And conversely, they don't sell something if they think it's going to go up. You only sell if thinks it's going to go down. So in the same way that, like, you know, prices and trends are self-fulfilling prophecies, because once a market breaks, you know, a certain high or a certain low, momentum carries through because people say, oh, well, everybody else thinks it's going to go higher, so it's going to go higher. And so then you see a price rally. Or is it like what happened in Tesla? Like, it broke out from its all-time high, which was like around 360 or something. And from there, it just didn't slow down. And so I like to use momentum indicators on like a long-term time frame chart, like a weekly or something. Once I see a weekly momentum indicator topping out, if it's, you know, bounded between 0 and 100 and it's already, you know, by around like a 90 rating, I'm like, yeah, you're not going to be a buyer in that market by any means. Technically, anything above a 70 on a bounded momentum indicator is a little overbought. And conversely, anything that is on a 0 to 100 bounded momentum indicator below 30, for instance, that's oversold, and you should be looking at risk-adjusted long positions from there. But again, there's a great market maxim. You know, in bull markets, stocks and you know, assets can remain overbought for a very long time. And conversely, in bear markets, assets can remain very oversold for a very long time. So it's one of those things where you just have to look at the sentiment. You have to be in the market. You have to be a market participant. You have to know how people are reacting at certain price levels. You need to understand volume. Volume is a key indicator that I look at. You know, if you have a market that is just traded, you know, it's been trending for, 30 days, and it finally had its highest daily volume or whatever at the top, that kind of means, you know, it's found a lot of sellers, and price is probably going to reverse, right? Supply and demand. And so there's another saying that price seeks volume, and when found, trend reverses. So that's another thing that I look at, is making sure that, you know, volume and price are in a healthy relationship, and that there's not a over imbalance in supply and demand. But yeah, those are kind of the things I look at to see if the market's topped out. It's kind of a long-winded answer. Why don't we just hop back on over to our new, or not our new, but our next little segment that we like to top in here called Smoke and Mirrors, where Pizza Mind and I kind of get into a little debate about really, you know, there's a lot of things in crypto that are elusive, let's call it, or like they have illusions and all that kind of stuff. So Smoke and Mirrors, we just like to say, hey, is this real? Is this not real? Is this a legitimate narrative? Is this not a legitimate narrative? Pizza Mind, what's the prompt?
So really the question is, how much of what's going on in the world on a macro scale really affects the crypto market? Or is it still completely existing in its own little bubble and it's going to do what it's going to do regardless of outside pressure? So the specific question is, does the coronavirus, which is slowing down the world economy, that is a fact, does that wipe out the upcoming bull run? Bryce, what do you think?
Okay. So the coronavirus, again, we made a little shtick about it here in the beginning. It's a serious thing, right? It's not really going away right now. I mean, I've heard that they've had some, what's it called, some vaccines and stuff that they developed. A lot of China is shutting down, from what I've heard. Again, I only hear a filtered, you know, stream of media from, you know, what can get out of China into American mainstream. So again, I'm very skeptical of what I hear.
Yeah, no one really knows the truth.
Yeah, nobody knows the goddamn truth. Exactly. And so it's like you can make all these different, you know, hypotheses and stuff. But who knows? And again, it's not like China's our best friend either. It's not in their best interest to share all their data, insofar as it's not, you know, Google's best interest to share all their data with Facebook. Like, yeah, that's just not how the world works. People keep things to themselves and all that kind of stuff. And so,
and it's not just China, but I mean, any government's job is to prevent mass public panic,
right,
and
exactly,
chaos. So any world government is not going to tell the citizens the truth about this, I mean, until it's way too late.
It's in the charter of every single central bank, right? The constitution of this charter of every single central bank, they've got two objectives. Keep inflation low, so we don't have, you know, deflation essentially, but keep inflation low or have hyperinflation. And most importantly is keep unemployment rate low. And because why would that be in a central bank's charter? It's because of the very reason that if unemployment is high, you're going to have riots and it's going to disrupt how society functions. But what's happening in China, they have all these manufacturing plants that, and you know, everybody is so closely in contact, you know, on all the different public transits and all that kind of stuff, the public markets, there's so much. They're shutting down. They are, you know, literally telling people. And I was talking to my buddy Clayton, shout out Clayton, who's over in Vietnam right now. I was talking to him because I'm planning a trip to Thailand, and he was saying, bro, I'm a school teacher over here in Vietnam, and we straight up don't work. Like, we haven't worked for a month, and nobody's allowed in schools. They've shut everything down. And I'm like, holy freaking crap. Like, that's something I haven't read in the American media, that, like, all these elementary schools in Vietnam or Hanoi or, like, this little area that he's in are not even having kids in school. And then we hear these stories about, again, China shutting down the manufacturing plants because they don't want contamination to spread and all this stuff. So you have people that are sitting at home just like in fear, waiting, and like all this kind of stuff. And what's really happening is that there's this entire, you know, population that is historically, you know, even, you know, in the long term and in the short term, the most productive population in humanity, that is now shutting down. And so what we're seeing in the stock market, like Pete, you mentioned in the beginning of this recording, that we are seeing equities, you know, U.S. equities and emerging markets and all sorts of different stuff start to sell off. We're seeing, you know, quite, you know, a 5% drawdown in one day the other day, 8.5% on the week, which is something that should be a little alarming. And again, like we said, I said like maybe 10 minutes ago or whatever, that when people expect lower prices, they become net sellers. And when I see everybody else selling, I'm going to sell because, oh, well, crap, everybody else is selling, I'm going to sell because we're all expecting lower prices. So the market is expecting lower prices, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy until we have some type of, you know, massive type of event that reverses the market. So that's like the psychology of the market that we're in. Everybody and I mean everybody, analysts from the conservative to the liberal side of the market are expecting just dreadful Q1 earnings for Chinese companies, American companies, emerging markets, everybody, because when China stands still for even a moment, for even a second, right? That means Apple can't get the phones they want. That means 100 million companies in America can't get the frickin' batteries or the parts that they want. There's back orders. There's all sorts of different delays that happen when, you know, you even shut down a country for one day. Think about it, right? So now that there's having these continued, this disruption, right, in the workflow of an entire population, that has really, 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 really far-reaching and damaging effects on a macro economy. So I take the position that Bitcoin is a asset, even though it's non-correlated to equities, insofar as it has different drivers of price, right? I take the position that it is going to not have necessarily a great performance in the midst of all this equity drawdown, because when you want to sell equities, you're going to want to sell your other risk on assets, right? You're going to want to sell your Bitcoin. You're going to want to sell your levered ETFs. You're going to want to sell everything because you want to be in a cash position ready to buy when things bottom out and resume an uptrend. So even though Bitcoin, everybody says, okay, Bitcoin is this asset that is uncorrelated and it should dump when stocks pump and, you know, vice versa and all that kind of stuff, I think right now it's tracking pretty closely to the sell-off in equities because of the coronavirus and all that stuff. Again, the halving is coming up in May of 2020 this year, which is going to have some really, really interesting effects on the market because we have a supply reduction in this asset, which is unlike anything else. So from that respect, you know, it has a different driver of price, so it's non-correlated. But I think that, you know, if people are going to be net sellers of equities, they more or less should be net sellers of other risk on assets like that. I think, you know, probably treasury bonds are getting bid up right now. You have, you know, the real estate market is still, you know, holding up a little bit. But yeah, manufacturing, you got the Dow Jones just getting hammered. You know, tech is getting hammered. The NASDAQ's at, you know, starting to break major support levels and stuff. So I think that the coronavirus is, whether or not it's like this, you know, end all be all apocalypse frickin' thing, it's definitely having a fundamental impact on the productivity of a nation, which has rippling effects to the earnings of you know, companies that rely on those kinds of materials and stuff.
But what will it do to the Bitcoin bull run that we expect to kick off at sometime this year? I think that it's a perfect storm that's brewing. It's shaking out the, you know, some hands that normally would be strong but are now weak, and potentially giving the rest of us an even better buying opportunity. Because before this hit, Bitcoin was a powder keg ready to explode. We had to have all-time record-breaking volume just to cap the price in the low 10,000s. When it broke up, I mean, you saw the volume explode from, you know, the high 20s and 30s into almost $50 billion in volume last year. Daily volume, not weekly, daily volume, to suppress the price from exploding even higher. And now that we've got this sell-off coming, I think this is very, very temporary. But now let's say stocks continue to go down and you've got all these investors that are like, oh my God, how are we going to make money this quarter? You know, the economy is really, really slowed down. Well, cryptocurrency has always done its own thing. It's open 24/7. It doesn't give a damn about the rules. It's all automated. It's mostly bots anyway. Mm-hmm. They don't read the news. They don't care about what's going on. So if the price starts to pump, it's going to continue to pump. So if we're in an upwards bull trend, that's just going to continue. It doesn't care what's going on in the world around it. It's the trend setter, not the trend follower. And I think when all these other investors who have not gotten into Bitcoin yet see, oh my God, there's still a way to make money, can I get in now? By the way, yes, you can. Regulations are in place.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see the greatest bull run of all time later this year, next year. That's my prediction.
All right. Well, I love it. I'm excited to see how everything plays out. Yeah. I mean, it's anybody's guess. Our guess is going to be as good as yours. But guys, at the end of the day, you know, this is a revolution, and there's never been an asset class quite like crypto that trades 24/7, 365, freaking twice on Sundays.
And worldwide.
Yeah, it's worldwide, right? This is a global revolution. You know, like for instance, for some context, right? The what's it called? The dot-com bubble in 2000, 2001, you know, that was a $7 trillion bubble. And that was largely confined to American stock exchanges. And, you know, when Bitcoin and crypto market topped out in late 2017, it hit about an $800 billion market cap. Maybe it tipped into $900 billion, but it never got above that really that trillion-dollar mark. But why am I saying this? I'm saying this because crypto has a much larger addressable market than, you know, internet stocks, right? And that bubble was $7 trillion, which dwarfs, you know, the Bitcoin bubble that happened a few years ago. And this is a bigger market. So I'm saying that, you know, even adjusted for inflation, $7 trillion back then, you could make a good argument that that is $40 to $50 trillion of notional value of that bubble in today's terms. So I think that, you know, just, you know, to your point, Pete's, about the next bull run being freaking face ripping and face melting. Absolutely, because we've seen it happen before, and it's going to happen again. History often rhymes, right? It doesn't repeat itself exactly, but it rhymes. And so if you had a market that was, you know, majorly just an American phenomenon, now you have a global phenomenon and 24/7 liquidity, and in, you know, quite a less regulated market, I will not be surprised once this thing cracks a $1 trillion market cap just to quickly rise then after. But, you know, with that being said, I think we should just hop on over to the news and close this week out.
Let's do it.
Yeah, yesterday, Wednesday, we had a classic ETF rejection for Bitcoin. It was the only one that was on the SEC's to-do list, essentially. Everybody else has withdrawn their claims. And this was an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, that was proposed by a up-and-coming company called Wilshire Phoenix. They are not nearly as big as some of the other ETF guys, like, you know, WisdomTree, who is, you know, they do the most of the ETFs and stuff. This is the new up-and-comer, but they claimed, you know, the SEC claimed that Wilshire Phoenix had not proven that Bitcoin and the Bitcoin markets globally are sufficiently resistant to market manipulation. And again, like, you know, these are some, you know, Bitcoin trades spot on unregulated markets, more or less. You know, you could have your BitMEXs of the world that are God knows where they're freaking registered. You have the Binances of the world where God knows where they're freaking operating out of. And these things set, you know, index pricing points for the ETF. And yeah, so they were hoping to buck this trend of, you know, market like not being market manipulative, or, you know, Wilshire Phoenix was in their argument for their ETF was saying, you know, we could back these ETFs with some U.S. Treasury bonds in addition to Bitcoin as to offset the quote unquote potential for manipulation on these unregulated exchanges. So they thought that was going to get through because it was a mixture of U.S. T-bonds as well as Bitcoin. But the SEC, the main, you know, the consensus was that that was not a good enough retort. However, Commissioner Hester Pierce, a.k.a. Bitcoin Mom, wrote this very, very, very long-winded kind of what's it called? Like, she did not agree with her commission's ruling, a dissent. Thank you. She said that this was, you know, it should have been approved, and what the SEC is doing is wrong. It's inhibitive to innovation, and that really this ETF should have been approved. So it's kind of interesting just to see that there's a little bit of infighting in, you know, a government institution like the SEC, whose main, you know, charter is to protect consumers at the end of the day, retail investors, financial institutions, all that kind of stuff, they just want to protect people. And they think that, you know, they're protecting people by not allowing a Bitcoin ETF. So we'll see. Definitely, I am of the opinion that we will not be seeing a Bitcoin ETF this year or anytime soon. It's just the nature of the beast, man. I mean, this thing was born in the dark, and it's going to live more or less in the dark. Like, you could trade these things on Robinhood or whatever, contracts for difference. I think that's what they trade on Robinhood and, you know, eToro and all these different things are CFDs. You're not actually holding the Bitcoin. You're just trading price action on it. So, yeah, again, I don't think that an ETF is going to get approved anytime soon. What else do we see in the markets this week in regards to news that kind of stuck out to you?
We've got the Swedish Central Bank testing the e-krona. This is something they've been working on for a while.
The corona?
I think it's called a krona, isn't it?
No, yeah, it is. Just it's funny that it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. so much going on right now. But yeah, so this
the
is
Central
their...
Bank digital currency.
Exactly. It's coming.
It's coming. They're coming. Testing this freaking thing.
That's right. So, and that, and you know, the U.S. dollar version,
yes,
should be coming sometime in the next couple of years too.
Right, Jerome Powell, who's the current chief of the Federal Reserve, was talking about. You know, we reported on this, I think maybe last week or 2 weeks ago, when he was extremely excited about, believe it or not, private transactions on a U.S. centralized ledger, but that he was just like, hey, basically at a high level, the American public is not going to love fully transparent transactions across the financial system. So we need to have an element of serious privacy to this U.S. digital currency, the digital dollar, whatever they're going to call it. So that was pretty cool.
So even if you're out there and you don't like Bitcoin, you think it's a scam, you don't believe in it still, central banks have already agreed that cryptocurrencies are the technology of the future.
Right. The technology of the future and the blockchain, right? That technology that underpins cryptocurrencies is 100%. Whether or not cryptocurrencies survive, it's 100% going to be what underpins, you know, the digital dollars and the digital liras or the kronas or the pounds, the euros, all that kind of stuff to make things a lot more seamless and frictionless. I actually, just on that note, before we move on to this last bit of news, read an article today, or sorry, yesterday, I suppose, and it was about the Bank of England that was saying that it is of utmost importance that a central bank have a digital currency. So that was just another little note that the Chancellor of the Bank of England put out there that it is coming, it is coming, it is coming. And lastly, we have Shopify. Most people know Shopify. They're a pretty big consumer-facing company. Shop online on the internet, all that kind of good stuff. They joined the Libra Association. And the Libra Association, as most of you guys know, and if you haven't heard of it, it is the Facebook cryptocurrency. And this cryptocurrency is more or less supposed to be, you know, free of any fees, instant transactions, all that kind of stuff. You could pay things through your Facebook Messenger wallet in any, you know, any part of the world, all that kind of stuff instantly. So Shopify put out a little statement that they're really excited to join Facebook and explore this new piece of the internet that is going to be feeless and instant and global. So Shopify is on board with the crypto train, more or less, I guess it's fair to say at this point. but yeah, guys, that is it. That was a long episode. That was 47 minutes. And we are about to get out of here. Again, if you want to go check out Crypto101Insider.com, you can find out a little bit more about what me and Pizza Mind are up to and how to get a little bit more value out of being a Crypto 101 member, being part of Crypt Nation, everybody. It's good to see you again. This episode is brought to you by Cog Network. Go to www.cognetwork.com. These guys are geared for gain, and you can be too. All right, Pete, I'll see you tomorrow.
I hope so, if I'm not dead.